Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Baby on the Brain, The Returners, a podcast brought to you by Stylist, dedicated to the big life questions you face when you're a new parent navigating a return to work. My name is Fliss, I'm the Digital Content Director at Stylist, and I returned to work last year after a 10-month break on maternity leave. Every week I'm joined by a different co-host, and today I'd like to introduce journalist and podcast host Rosie Davis-Smith. Rosie is the founder of her own business and has two small children. Together, we're going to be discussing sleep. After complications during the birth of her second daughter, Isla, Rosie developed postpartum insomnia, which spiraled into waking every night at 2 a.m. and not going back to sleep. Rosie, welcome to Baby on the Brain, and thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Can you tell me a little bit more about your experiences with postpartum insomnia?
Yeah, thank you for having me. So I had my first child in 2020, kind of fine, obviously not normal because
I was
going to
say,
but
pandemic, yeah. Baby, but it was fine.
Yeah, it was fine. February 2020 as well. So actually, I went into lockdown pretty much straight away. And I actually fell pregnant pretty quickly with my second, bit of a surprise. My first was 4 months old. You can get pregnant when breastfeeding. We got that. And so, yeah, I thought, well, they're going to be close together. This is great. And then so March 2020, 13 months later, I had our second. And yeah, bit of a bumpy birth, you know, a few complications, not too bad, but you know, had to go to surgery afterwards, didn't bond with her straight away because of that. Obviously, people weren't allowed in the hospital.
Oh, yeah, of course.
She had a bit of an episode of kind of choking when she was very, very little, like a few hours old. And it really stuck with me. And she obviously woke in the night because she's a newborn. But I, that's what newborns do.
No. Is it?
Never.
Nobody told me
that. But I started to wait before her. And I thought maybe I'm just preempting. And progressively it got worse. I'd start to wake hours and hours before her. I'd lie there waking for her to wake up. And eventually she started to sleep through the night, but I never did. And I didn't know it was insomnia at the time until I finally kind of called a doctor and I was like, I'm just not sleeping at night. And they said, you've got insomnia. I didn't realize it was a mental health issue either, really naively. So I'd wake every single night after about 2 or 3 hours sleep, normally about 2 a.m. I've tried everything, anything you can name I've tried. I've had all different types of therapy, kinesiology, reflexology, acupuncture, kind of tablets, antidepressants. And I kind of feel like I've tried so much, I know what works, but I'm still probably only getting about 4 hours sleep. And she's 2.5 now.
Wow.
So this is going to be interesting. I'm really excited to hear from Sarah.
When I first read your story, and you know, you've been really open and honest, and I just want to say thank you for that, because I'm sure it's helped hundreds of women out there who have also read your story. I didn't realize that it was still going on.
Yeah.
You kind of think of postpartum as being the first year, right?
Yeah.
It's the first year, yeah. And then you get, you know, better. But
I really thought
you're still suffering.
Yeah, I thought when she started sleeping, I'd start as well, but actually it's still the 2 a.m. wake ups. I think I've got lots of questions, Sarah, but at what point does it stop? Does it stop being postpartum and just stop being general insomnia?
Yeah. And so you're the founder of your own business. And yes. I have nothing but respect for that. Being a woman who has been, I've been back at work for a year now, and I'm very grateful that I can just go in and do my job and leave, especially during the periods, like in terms of my sleep, I am grateful and lucky, I suppose, that it isn't insomnia keeping me awake. It's a child. That is wild and really actually quite hard to deal with. I suppose if I'm being really brutally honest with you right now, actually the worst thing for me is the guilt about the frustration that I feel in the middle of the night with her. So she is going to be, well, she's just turned two, and for the first 2 years of her life she never slept through the night, ever, not once. And she's big into mummy, and I'm good, right? I know I'm good, but there are times when I wish she was into daddy as much as she's into mummy. There are two of us, and I'm, you know, it's great that we are parenting together. I take my hat off to anyone who's a single parent in this situation. But it's hard. I remember going back to work and my colleagues and my co-workers would come up to me and be like, have you had much sleep? Like, how's the sleep going? And I'd be like, yeah, it's fine. Thinking, I am so tired. She doesn't sleep. I would put her down at 8 o'clock. She'd wake up at 9. We'd go back up and resettle her. She'd wake up at 10:30. We'd go back up and resettle her. She'd wake up at midnight. You know, it was these kind of, and then I'd just bring her into the bed, and that's really uncomfortable. Like, I did co-sleep and I am all for anything that gets you through a full night's sleep. I'm not in any band of parenting. Yeah, exactly. But the sleep, the sleep was really hard. I'm laughing because I'm thinking of a story and I can't believe I'm actually going to tell you this, but I think the height of when I knew it wasn't normal was when I was so tired on maternity leave. And you kind of expect some level of sleeplessness, right? I was sobbing trying to get her to sleep in her cot during the day. It's nap time. Why won't you just go to fucking sleep? Right? And I was probably saying that to her, which is even worse. And I gave up and I kind of picked her up in like a flurry of emotions, stomped downstairs, grabbed my car keys, got to the car, got her in the car, threw the car keys in, turned it on, and I was still sobbing, and I was like, I know it's not safe for me to drive right now. And then I realized I still had my slippers on. And I'd left the house, and she was in the car, she was in her car seat, she's only what, 7, 8, 9 months old. So then I was crying even more because I knew I had to get her out the car so I could go back inside and put my shoes on. And I called my mum, and my mum was like, this isn't normal. Please let someone help. And I think until that point, I hadn't really spoken to anyone about it because I just assumed everyone feels like this, right? And they don't. It,
one little thing, when you're that sleep deprived, one little thing can push you over the edge.
Yeah.
Like one more cry or leaving slippers on or dropping a plate of food on the floor. I feel for you. I've been there so many times.
Yeah. And actually, I think the facts that I didn't realize then, because obviously now for the last 2 years I've been obsessed with reading stuff about sleep, and that is not helpful either. I really like, there's some really unhelpful information out there, and the science behind it is all about how poor sleep can lead to an increase in your cortisol levels, which increases your stress hormone. And I am genetically predisposed to psoriasis, and my psoriasis has also just gone absolutely nuts, and it's all linked together, isn't it? And I don't know. I just think we laugh and joke about sleep because we're mums, you know. Yeah. Sleep, what is it? And then you think about mums returning to work. That's the thing for me. It's you're returning to work. You're having to do a job. You run a business. Like, how did you get around that?
Day to day, I kind of, for a long time, day to day, I kind of trundled through.
Okay.
And then there came a point, she must have been a year old, and I completely broke. I just completely broke, and I'd seen a few different doctors and sleep coaches and other people. And I actually turned, I've got a team of, there's about six of us. I actually turned around to the team and I was completely honest with them. And I said, you know, I said, I've got insomnia, but actually I'm really unwell mentally. Yeah. Like, this insomnia has spiraled so much now that I have to take some time, and I'm not going anywhere kind of for weeks or months. But if in the middle of the day I'm like, guys, I just need to go and not even lie down, just sit.
Yeah.
And like, I'd love to hear from Sarah on this in a bit, but like, getting sleep requires so much of your time and energy during the day, meditating, emptying your brain, having a moment for you, doing a bit of yoga, just having that time, allowing myself that time during the day and telling the team I needed that time massively, massively helped. And I, even today, I still tell them, you know, I still have, well, I'm still doing these kind of writing these articles about insomnia and doing podcasts about insomnia.
Good.
So it's good that they still know I'm still in this phase of my life. I haven't yet tackled it, but being honest with people really helped me in the workplace.
I've got so much respect for you as a leader, being so honest with your team. That must be that must be really hard, actually.
Because you don't want to seem like a failure and you want to seem strong for them, but there has to come a point.
But they will appreciate that down the line, whether that is with kids or not, your honesty about... And actually, it was interesting that you connected postpartum insomnia with mental health, because I'd never made that connection. I know that it's all in your brain, but foolish me didn't...
Yeah.
I didn't really think about that at all.
It wasn't till a doctor say, you're mentally unwell. I was like, why? I've just got insomnia. No,
yeah.
He was like, no, it's a mental health issue.
It feels like a strong phrase, doesn't it? It really does.
Yeah.
But actually, sleep is connected to every single part of your life. And I think until you don't have it, you don't realise how hard everything can be. It's that old adage of your cup. And if your cup is empty, like you said, one tiny inconvenience can be the end of everything. The amount of times I have like ugly cried about something tiny. And with rational brains, you know, my husband, he's getting 8 hours sleep a night. Lucky him. With a rational brain, of course, you shouldn't really be crying about the fact that there's no cheese left. But that's like, if all I've been dreaming of is cheese on toast, then that's the end of my life. That is the end of the world. Yeah. It's just going to spiral from here on out.
The littlest thing. I'm with you.
I've been there. I wanted to quickly talk to you about, I was honest at work after a while with how little sleep I was getting. And I'm really lucky that my workplace is led by not just women, but also women who have had similar experiences, and women who asked me, would you like my advice before giving me it? Which is really nice. Yeah. Or just giving me a hug. Like, oh God, it's hard, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, fine. We're in it together. And you have been lucky. You are leading a team and you've been honest and that's been well received. There will be people listening to this who don't work in workplaces where they feel like they could be honest with someone. How do you think, I don't know how you go about tackling that if you don't feel like you can be honest. Like, women returning to work who aren't getting more than, at some points I wasn't getting more than 2 hours in one stretch a night. Oh. It just must be really hard.
I can't even imagine. I think if I had worked for a company that I couldn't have been honest with, I would have been signed off as like not able to work, or I probably would have quit, because I just physically, I'd struggle to look after the kids and do my job. I struggle to do anything well, as you do when you're so sleep deprived. The only thing that I think really kind of helped me speak to the team honestly was everything I was reading. I read a lot, as you do, you know, when you're sleep deprived, anything to get some sleep, you read a lot and you actually realize how much sleep affects your life.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to present articles, not even to people at work, because the girls didn't need that, but like my family, to explain, you know, this is what I'm suffering with, that I think that really helps. Any kind of evidence to back up kind of what a lack of sleep can do to your day to day, would be my kind of only kind of supporting words, but it's so tough.
I agree. And actually, just to go back to something you said, you know, if I hadn't had that support, or if I was in that position, I think I would have quit. 85% of mothers leave the full-time workforce within 3 years of having their first child. And I'm not connecting that entirely to sleep, but if you aren't getting proper sleep where you feel rejuvenated, and I'm not surprised is what I'm here to say. I just feel like because it's a woman's issue, again, we're here to all sort it out for ourselves.
Yeah.
I shouldn't come on this tact right now, but it's difficult. I don't know how we can fix this problem.
I was actually listening to your podcast episode with Anna Whitehouse, and there's some really, if anyone hasn't listened to it, I recommend going back and listening to it. There's just some things in there, just being kind of approaching things in the right way and being honest with people. Something needs to change, because it is, I know in my head at night, I'm thinking about, oh, I didn't put that in the nursery bag. I'm thinking about really stupid things. Oh, I didn't get back to nursery. Oh, I didn't do that. Oh, I didn't do this. And when they were littler, it was like, oh, I need to change her nappy. It's always something that I'm thinking about at 3 a.m., something that's playing on my mind. And it does fall onto the mother. And I don't know. I think a lot of it is my problem. My husband's very good. I just feel this necessity to take everything on.
Yeah. The mental load. That's exactly
the mental load.
What I talk to my friends about. The mental load is nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
But we're here to talk about sleep. And on that note, I would like to bring in our guest for today's episode. Sarah Ockwell-Smith is a highly regarded author who specialises in the psychology and science of parenting, gentle parenting and attachment theory, with particular interest in child sleep. She's written 14 parenting books translated into over 30 languages, which have sold 500,000 copies, and 495,000 of those are to me. So thank you so much, Sarah. Hi, welcome.
Hi.
You've been listening to Rosie and I talk about our experiences, which are at the opposite end of the scale with sleep. If there's one thing all the books and media I've consumed about sleep has taught me, it's that no two experiences are ever the same. But do you think what we've been talking about is common for women?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously my speciality is child sleep, not adult sleep. So I don't think I can add a huge amount to the adult sleep conversation. But I think, a couple of points that you've mentioned that I'll pick up on, that it is a woman's issue and it shouldn't be, but actually it's a broader issue. Anything that involves care, so whether it's caring for children, whether it's caring for adults with disabilities, whether it's caring for elderly, it all falls at the feet of women. If you look at the percentage of men and women who actually work in care, it's all women. And if you look at the people who do it from an unpaid perspective, most of it is women. And I think feminism has done great wonders for giving us as women the opportunity to go and work and be equal to men and blah, 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 blah. But the trouble is we've now got everything when we can't have everything. So we can be equals, we can run companies, but we're also raising children and we take on the mental load, we take on the predominant level of care. And what it's done is added too much to our basket. We're not sharing it enough. There is not enough help for it. Our governments do not appreciate and acknowledge and pay for care properly. So we are left to carry everything. And it isn't because if we're married or partners, if they're men, it isn't because they don't want to help. It's just that we still grow up in a patriarchy and it's not the men's role to do that. So as great as your relationship is, all of the research shows that the women are the ones that carry the mental load. Mm-hmm. And we are the ones, when something happens at nursery, they ring us. For years, my eldest is 21 now, but my youngest is 16. And I never understood why, when they had both my telephone number and my husband's telephone number, the school always rang me first. I work full-time, he worked full-time. Why do you ring me? And it's just a default setting that all of this falls at the feet of women. And while we're trying to kind of have it all in the workplace and at home, obviously it can't work. And we ultimately, it's our mental health and our physical health that suffers.
Mm.
Then people come to me from a sort of a child sleep perspective and say, I can't possibly cope, how do I change my child's sleep? The difficulty with that is 9.9 times out of 10 their child is sleeping normally.
Yeah,
but the society we live in is not geared up for us to take care of that. So the difficulty comes with, how do I change my child's sleep when my child's sleep is actually normal? It's problematic to me because I'm exhausted and I can't do everything. But actually, there's nothing wrong with it. It's developmentally normal. So what you guys have been speaking about what I'm speaking about is a societal issue. It's a political issue.
Yeah.
But we place it all on our babies and our toddlers and our children, or on ourselves with, I must do better self-care or something. But I think we need to be really open and honest and say, do you know what? We can't do all of this. We need better support. We need better pay for maternity leave and paternity leave. We need businesses legally to be able to give us more of a break while we're raising families. It is an issue that we need to speak about as adults and involve our politicians, and not an issue where we have to try and change our baby's sleep. So I've literally just written a book about childism, which talks about the discrimination of children and how we kind of like everything that's wrong with our society, it gets dumped on children to try and fix. And I think, I don't have all the answers. You know, when I work with parents, I call it taking the edge off rather than sleep training.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, you're in an impossible situation. Here are some things that might help to make things a bit easier while your child is growing up and their sleep develops naturally.
Yeah.
It has to be accompanied by political lobbying.
The societal expectation is something that I wanted to get onto, actually, because I had, maybe foolishly, no idea about child sleep before I had a baby. Rosie, I don't know what your experiences were, but when I had Amber in May 2021, so I was pregnant during the pandemic. I managed to keep it a secret till I was 20 weeks because I didn't see anyone. I couldn't even go home for Christmas because my parents happened to live in that tiny little area of the country that was on a lockdown for the rest of time in Leicester. They were just in lockdown for so long. So I didn't talk to anyone apart from my husband, and he's got absolutely no experience in anything to do with parenting. Fair, he'd never had a baby before. So we kind of went into it thinking, God, yeah, we're going to be tired. And then when it happened and she didn't sleep through the night. Sleep through the night is a phrase that I would like to ban anyway, because no one sleeps through the night is what I've now realized, because we're all waking up throughout the night anyway and kind of rolling over or whatever. Going on TikTok is probably my downfall. But the societal expectation, I think, is what's helped me at work, because the women around me understand it, but there will be so many women listening to this podcast who aren't in a position to be surrounded by people who are sympathetic to that and will say, oh, just put them in a room, they'll be fine. And for some kids that will be fine. For Amber, it absolutely would not. She would have just screamed that house down for days on end if I tried to do that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So I think you're right, dismantling it, that's a big job though. Again, it's down to women.
Absolutely, and it falls again at the feet of women to fix it. You know, it's interesting you said about your husband didn't know about parenting, but what is really interesting is men do not have these conversations like this on podcasts. They do not read the books, they do not buy the books, they do not write the books, they do not do the social media. All the parenting research falls again at the feet of women. And obviously there are some men, you know, who are very involved. But if I look at my followers, for instance, probably over my platforms together, I've got 300,000 followers. They are 98% female.
Yeah. I think some of the stats as well that I know my NCT group share is really nice. And there was an infographic the other day, and it was surveying parents of kids up to the age of four. And it said, I think 78% of the 10,000 women who had been surveyed, their 3 to 4 year olds still woke up in the middle of the night. But that isn't what we see on movies. It's not what we see in TV. No. It's not what you ever hear about. And so I came into this completely naive to the fact that when I went back to work when she was I actually went back when she was 10 months old, that she wouldn't, you're telling me that she's not going to sleep through the night the day before I have to go to London? What? No, surely not. Sarah, I suppose my first question is, what would you say to anyone listening who's currently struggling with sleep?
The first thing I would say to everybody is it's not your fault. You know, forget all the videos or stuff that you've seen online. You've not made bad habits. It's not because you're missing wake windows or anything else like that. It really is not your fault. Most sleep is developmental and genetic. So if somebody has a good sleeper...
It's genetic?
Yeah, absolutely. They're probably lucked out in the genetic lottery.
Wow, okay.
My two sleep so differently.
Yeah.
Can that be really common with siblings that one
absolutely.
Is genetically a beautiful sleeper and the other one is
absolutely,
nightmare?
Yeah, you know, I've got four. Thankfully, my worst sleeper was my last one because I've always said I don't think I would have had more children if she'd come first.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so much of it is out of our control. And I think in our society now, we desperately want to try and control everything. And it's one thing that's not. And actually, going back to what you said about when you think they sleep through the night, the messages out there were so incorrect. There was a big study done in 2019 that asked over 5,000 parents, when did your sleep actually improve after having children? And the most common answer was 6 years.
Wow.
So for most parents, their sleep gets better when the child is about six.
Yeah.
And why is that?
At every age, it's difficult, isn't it? So you've got the baby waking constantly because they need cuddling or feeding, and then toddlers have nightmares and night terrors, and they don't want to go to sleep because they're developing more autonomy and independence. And then siblings come along, and that makes the sleep of the firstborn go out the window again, and potty training and starting preschool and nursery and school. So from a kind of emotional perspective, their life starts to get on an even keel at around 5 or 6 years. But if you look at how sleep develops, it takes until they're around 4 or 5 years of age for a child's sleep cycle to look like an adult's. So to have the same amount of REM, rapid eye movement sleep as us, to have a really well-developed circadian rhythm, so body clock, to have a similar length sleep cycle. So we seem to think that sleep matures at kind of like 6 months, 12 months.
Yeah.
But it's actually, if you looked at a child's sleep cycle and looked at their brain development and how sleep works, they are going to be just about starting school age before it really is similar to that of an adult. But then you've also got the fact that actually your own sleep is really affected. So postpartum is either 6 months or 6 weeks, depending on whose definition you look at. So in the postpartum period, of course, our sleep is all over the place because we're going through a tremendous transition chemically, physically, emotionally. And of course, that makes our sleep go out the window. And then after that, it's quite hard for us to, you know, get our sleep back to normal. Even, you know, as Rosie said, once they've stopped waking, we will often habitually wake at the time they would have woken. Mm. And then you've also got things depending on your age, like then if we're really unlucky, perimenopause comes in. And
yeah.
Perimenopause plays absolute havoc with sleep. And insomnia is a really big symptom of the perimenopause. So it kind of all, it's like a jigsaw puzzle of like bad stuff that might happen sleep wise. And if you're lucky, you only have one or two pieces. If you're unlucky, you complete the whole jigsaw puzzle.
And you know, for most women, actually, they're going back to work in this.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's the other part of that puzzle, is that they're kind of expected to go back, could be full time, could be whatever. But you're expected to go into an office and show up and have the brain space and capacity to either be creative or at the very least logical. So it's nuts, actually, isn't it?
And there's that saying, isn't there, that women or mothers are expected to work like they don't have children.
Yes.
And mother like they don't have a job. Because they have two full-time jobs. And it never gets easy, you know. I'm talking at completely the opposite end of the age spectrum of children from you two. It just gets different. And I don't think we allow parents enough grace.
Yeah. True. Very true.
There's not enough understanding.
I don't think there's the compassion
in
a lot of places, because I often feel like I moan about sleep. But actually, if I gave myself a little bit of compassion, it's because it was really fucking hard. I was exhausted. And of course, it took up every single thing I think about. And Rosie, you must agree. Like, I think about sleep a lot.
I think, all day long. All day long while I'm not sleeping.
And then the irony is the more you think about it, the more you worry about it, the harder it will become for you yourself.
Yeah, it spirals so easily.
And then our children pick up on our stress and then their sleep is worse and then you're in this big vicious circle.
Raising a child and staying in work is a real balancing act. But raising a child with special educational needs and staying in work can feel like enough to tip you over the edge. I'm Lisa Miller, journalist and mother to a daughter with a rare genetic syndrome. I'd like to invite you to the Sen Mums Career Club, a new podcast where each episode I speak to a different guest who has their own unique journey navigating a career alongside special needs parenting. We discuss the triumphs, tribulations, and things we've learned along the way. Listen to the Sen Mums Career Club from DC Thompson, available on all your major podcasting platforms.
So how do we start to be more open and honest about it, or a lack of it in the workplace? Rosie, I think you're leading the way with this, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's easier for me because team of six, I didn't have to go to any big, scary corporate giant with kind of outdated ways and say, I think I would have felt silly. I honestly think I would have felt really, I'm not sleep. I think I would have thought that people would laugh at me. I don't know. Sarah, is there any advice on how people, like parents that aren't sleeping, could approach it with the workplace?
I think, like you said, we just have to talk about it. You know, we are getting more open about talking about mental health now, and we talk about physical health, and then I think we need to add sleep into the equation as well. I do think things are starting to change incredibly slowly. So I work with a couple of organizations who help support large companies with for their parents specifically, and I will give talks to, you know, big banks in London about how to cope with sleep as a parent.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. There are tiny bits of change happening, but they really are tiny. Yeah. And actually what I do see is the really big companies, you know, the brand household names, a lot of them actually are having these conversations, and a lot of them will have like sort of employee wellness branches and a much more support. Mm-hmm. So I think it's happening in some, not all of them, but some of the really big, well-known organisations. And I think it's obviously happening, as Rosie says, in the smaller organizations. It's almost like the ones in the middle we're missing out on. But it comes back to, we've got to get this into a political debate. You know, we need to talk more. Our government, and not just, you know, the current government, pretty much all governments we've had since I can remember have been horrific at supporting families. They are still sexist, despite the fact that they'll say they're not. When it comes back to what I was saying, you know, care is predominantly in the domain of women. So we are disproportionately affected by their terrible childcare policies. And, you know, there's no denying the recent announcement for free childcare is terrible for everybody involved, whether it's families, children, or those in the childcare sector. I keep coming back. I can't get around the fact. I keep coming back to the fact we've got to change it on the top level, and we've got to lobby politicians. And you have got some amazing, you know, somebody like Stella Creasy.
Who will absolutely
try and get it debated in Parliament. But there needs to be more mums in Parliament, basically, I think is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, one mum breastfeeding in Parliament is excellent. Imagine if it was five. Or in New Zealand, I'm sure there was a man who brought his newborn baby to their Parliament once. And he was like, because we're 50-50 parenting and I have to be at work today. So what do you want me to do? And I was like, yes to that man. So what proactive things do you think we could do to improve sleep, whether that's your child's sleep or your own sleep, really? Is there anything proactive we can do? Or really, is it try to stop thinking about it?
Yeah, I mean, from a general parent perspective, I'm quite anti-self-care. And people were like, what do you mean?
That's interesting.
There are a lot of messages. You must do this. I think, as Rosie said, you must do your meditations. You must do your yoga. You must do Pilates. You must do a nice bubble bath. And I think, ironically, we've now created something else for us to worry about, something else for us to pay for in a time when many of us don't have disposable income, and something else that we feel that we're a bad parent if we can't achieve, because it's like, oh my God, I can't even do the self-care. And then when we do the self-care, it doesn't work. And then we think, well, there must be something wrong with me because so-and-so on Instagram said, do this meditation 3 minutes before bedtime and you'll sleep well. And I didn't. So I must be the problem. So I talk about self-kindness, which is not forcing yourself to do all of these things. If they work for you, then that's brilliant. But it's more a mindset shift in your head, which is, you know what? I am good enough. I am trying my best. If I am exhausted and I yell at the children today, I'm going to give myself grace. You know, I'm doing the best I can, and saying no to things, taking on board less. So I call myself a reformed people pleaser. I would always jump in if preschool sent round a, can somebody help at our fate? I would volunteer. It's like something in my brain would volunteer before I thought about it. And if somebody posted on our local Facebook group, or can somebody do this, I'd volunteer. And if somebody asked me face to face, can you do this, I'd say yes. And I realized, actually, every time I say yes to that, it's like I'm saying no to something inside myself or my family. So having those boundaries and saying no and not taking on stuff and not caring if, I don't think people think you're a bad person if you don't do them, but sort of persevering your space, I think, is really important. So that, I think, I put at number one. The second I would say is expectations of what normal child sleep looks like. And most of it is not what we read in magazines or books or see on the internet or watch on TV programs. They're generally, children just do not sleep well. And that's not a problem for them anyway. It might be for us. They just sleep really differently. Their sleep is very immature, and it takes years to mature for them to sleep well. That, I know, doesn't help us, but I think when we realise, okay, I'm not doing anything wrong, I've not made bad habits, it's okay to feed my baby to sleep or rock them to sleep, I'm not causing them to sleep poorly. And also, it takes pressure off so that we don't obsessively track their sleep times in an app or something. Because the more we do that, the more concerned and anxious we get about it. And you're back in that vicious spiral of really stressed parent, child picks up on it. And then ultimately, when they do sleep, that makes it harder for you to sleep because you're so wound up and stressed.
Rosie, I can see you laughing with me. Of course. Tell me you also tracked your child's sleep.
Of course.
Obsessively. Oh my goodness.
Who doesn't? Especially the first.
I wish I could show you right now. We had a spreadsheet, and then someone said there's an app, and then we got the app, but I still got the spreadsheet. And even worse than that, guys, I started to track my own sleep.
I was going to say, and then it spiraled into my sleep.
And you've got a wearable that you check every morning. How did I sleep? What percentage REM did I have? Blah, blah, blah. I would do it. If I had children now, I'm sure I would. I only didn't because these didn't exist at the time. And actually, I felt very grateful for that.
It makes you feel worse. If anyone out there is wearing
absolutely
a tracker, let me tell you right now, when you're not sleeping through the night, it ain't going to help you sleep. It just helps you realise how little you're getting.
And I don't think they record correctly. Mine tells me I have 8 hours sleep. I can tell you I was up for 4 of those hours.
So. Just lying really still.
I was lying like really still. Can I just say, Sarah's point on self-kindness, I said in the intro, I have tried everything you can possibly think of for insomnia. The only thing I have found like to really work long-term is exactly that, self-kindness. Mm. You know, the other day I had to tell myself, you are a good parent, you know. I hadn't even done anything wrong. I was just like, you are a good parent. You be kind to yourself. And then I got really upset and burst into tears. I was like, God, I've really hated myself for 3 years just because I'm not sleeping and I'm trying to do everything. And the other point that you said about doing everything, I say no to as much as I possibly can. My friend yesterday was like, do you want to go to Lisbon and watch Taylor Swift? Of course I do, but no. Because if I commit to that, it's 4 days away from the kids that I need to organise, I'll be stressed, and I really want to go. But actually, just when you're not sleeping, just the slower pace of life, it just, I'm not rushing to London or going to do, I've just got rid of my office in London, so I don't have to be doing that anymore. Slowing down and just being a little bit kinder to myself. Sarah, I'm so glad you said that, because
it's all right.
I have found that's the only thing.
It's like having a weekend where we think if we're a good parent, we'll have, you know, interesting and fun things to do with our children. We'll go on this day trip and we'll have a picnic and we'll do this. And I'm like, do you know, when I was growing up, I loved my weekends and we did nothing. I've actually realised we did very little because we were quite poor, but at the time I loved them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, thinking, okay, it's Sunday, I'm going to do nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just potter around the house. You know, I think we need to do more pottering. Pottering was very much something we did in the 70s, 80s and 90s, and now it seems unproductive or lazy or not good parenting.
Yeah. I love a potter.
But kids need downtime too. And actually, ironically, the more you do with them and the sort of they get overtired, actually the worse they'll sleep as well.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's a roller coaster. Literally, it's a roller coaster, isn't it? Oh gosh.
But it comes back to us trying to be perfect and have it all and do everything. And it's not possible.
Absolutely.
Just one last thing would be top tip on how to handle family and friends when you as a parent are getting no sleep. When you're just so boring that you've said for 2 years, and Fliss, you'll probably agree with this, I am so tired. Like, does there come a point where you just stop telling them, or I feel like a bore?
I don't know. I think it would depend on your family and friends, wouldn't it? How sort of empathetic they are. I don't think we should apologise for feeling tired or feeling sick. Mm. I don't think we should feel like we're being boring or we're upsetting somebody. You know, that's, again, it's a very feminine thing to take on board other people's feelings, but we're not responsible for them finding you boring or annoying.
And I bet they don't, is where I get to with this.
There probably is somebody who does, if we're honest.
Yeah.
But those people who really care about you, they might get a bit irritated in the moment, but ultimately they really love you and they want the best for you.
Yeah.
It's true.
And then we just have to dismantle society's expectation.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to stop apologising as well, I think.
Yeah.
Comes into, I think, what men would say. They wouldn't be constantly apologising that I'm really sorry, I'm sorry I can't do this. They would just say, sorry, I can't do this, and move on.
Mm. So true. I found that really, really interesting. And also, I follow Sarah on every single social platform that I have and have also got her books, and we've shared them around our NCT group. So I was already a fangirl, but I am already more of a fangirl than I was. Rosie, I think if I had one key takeaway, it would be actually something you both said about me being a woman going back to work and finding it really hard because I wasn't getting much sleep. And for me, the cause of that lack of sleep was a child. Just being honest about it. And if we can tackle that by having more conversations and being honest about it with our colleagues and co-workers, I kind of hope that society might start thinking differently about sleep. I don't know about you, but my expectations before I had kids was, oh yeah, she's a woman who's got kids, but I'm sure she's getting 8 hours sleep a night, right? Yeah, otherwise she's doing something wrong. And now I want to change that for everyone in the run-up to having kids, as well as other women who might be struggling out there. So I'm going to be really honest. My team are going to be bored.
I think that people think, you know, you go back to work after 9, 10 months, even a year, and that's it. Of course, they're sleeping through the night. And actually, it's really interesting, like, hearing from Sarah that, you know, 4, 5, 6, that's when kind of sleep rhythm kicks in. So, yeah, really, really interesting. I feel better.
Yeah, I do as well. And look, when you look at that stat about 85% of mothers leaving the full-time workforce within 3 years, sleep, lack thereof, and the full impact that has on you and your family and your surroundings, as both of us have experienced, Rosie, it's huge. And we need to not make that tiny. Let's not make it small. Let's shout about it a little bit more. Let's talk about it. Let's be really open and honest about it. And be open and honest about the fact that kids don't sleep through the night. The expectation shouldn't be that at 6 months you can move them into their own room and they are close the door at 7 p.m. and you won't see them again till 7 a.m. Like, that's a unicorn, I'd say.
That's actually been my biggest takeaway. I kind of focus so much on my own sleep. And like Isla, my youngest, is still like up in the night, up really early. We went through a 5 a.m. phase last week.
Oof.
And actually what I've realized is that's very, very normal. And that's okay. And I don't need to beat myself up about it and be lying there at 3 a.m. thinking, oh, if she's going to get up at 6, I've only got 3 hours. You know, it's very normal what she's going through. And actually, I don't know about you. Actually, Fliss, I saw you writing too, but I've written a load of notes. Red night light. You know,
I wrote that. Yes, red light in bathroom.
I've got one and I put the white setting on. What am I doing?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, some really great takeaways on kind of just being a bit kinder to myself. It's okay if they're not sleeping, and hopefully one day my sleep will kick in.
It will. Also, Rosie, both you and I have done probably the most reading on sleep of anyone in the world, yet have still taken notes.
Still, exactly.
There is more to learn.
There is always something to learn. Always something to learn.
I want to say a special thank you to my co-host, Rosie, and our guest, Sarah. Next week, I'm joined by Becky Vieira and our guest, Zoe Blasky, to talk about the mental health impacts of being a woman returning to work after maternity leave. You can tweet us at Stylist Magazine, find us on Instagram, and use the hashtag #StylistBabyOnTheBrain. Remember to subscribe, share, and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts, which will help other mums returning to work looking for podcasts like this find us more easily.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.